you can explain the Bin Laden episode.
Ooh, boy, that's a bad one.
And then we'll fucking, I don't know, get to the finale of the first season where it comes back to the sorority chick.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to cut to the last, end of the year, end of the show.
We need to talk about Jeff Neuser.
The prison, dad in prison.
Campus rape. And the final.
And then the finale.
Yeah, that's it.
And then the finale.
Okay.
This may go to an hour and a half.
That's fine. People love it.
Okay.
They're hogs. They love to sop it up like flop. Our fans are all SOPs.
I'm so glad that I won't forget to edit this part out.
News. Talking about news. Still in the news today. Doing it every way.
News.
I'm talking about news. Doing the news with a friend and a muse. Doing the news. Some people don't want to hear the news, but I say that's not okay. You need all the news, all of the time, every night and day. News. I'm talking about news. Doing the news with the friends and Jews. Choose to do the news. Talking about news. Making it all happen in the newsroom tonight. No matter, we'll make a fight, whatever we need, so that people will know what happened today. All over the world, doing the news for you.
News. Hello, everybody.
Welcome to the news.
Welcome to the goddamn news. I'm just going to let everybody know, you don't have to follow suit, but in the spirit of the newsroom, after having absorbed its incandescent message about the importance and necessity of good journalism, I will, throughout the entire show, be calling it the goddamn news.
In case you haven't figured it out already, this is now, I think, the sequel to the West Wing, to the much heralded, to the critically acclaimed West Wing episode.
Yeah, and I honestly think at this point we got to make it a trilogy and do a Studio City at some point,
too. It's never going to happen. In the West Wing episode, I think we sort of inadvertently uncovered a new area of study and, you know, heralded the arrival of a new and a very important form of political analysis, which is reading the disaster of contemporary journalism and liberalism through the lens of Aaron Sorkin's shows. After we did The West Wing, I was like, man, I didn't remember how bad that show was. Holy shit. Watching it again was a nightmare. After having seen a fair amount of The Newsroom now, I can
half of the newsroom we've seen.
I can safely say now The West Wing is good.
I've seen,
or at least in comparison, unlike The West Wing, which I had seen as a kid, so I had some familiarity with, I had never seen The Newsroom before embarking upon this journey.
Yeah, only Felix had the dedicated mental disorder to watch this entire series.
This is a family thing. Every year at our Christmas, we watch all The Newsroom as a family. You know,
what Jews do on Christmas.
Well, kind of. It's more that some Jews are Orthodox, some are Reform, we're ironist Jews. I'm like the bad kid in the Breakfast Club. You know, you got a radio flyer wagon for Christmas. Me, I too ironically watch a show and make fun of it for 8 hours and develop prodromal schizophrenia. This swaying back and forth, that's what I have.
We're coming out of a couple days now of watching basically nonstop Newsroom.
News!
We just finished up the season 3 finale.
We'll get into the episodes themselves, which are amazing. But like I said, this is so much more punishing than The West Wing. And if you listen to The West Wing episode, it's pretty clear how I felt about that. But The Newsroom is so, it's like the freebase version of The West Wing. Like, it is instantly and intensely, addictively sanctimonious, just treacly.
It's the China
adorkable.
White of Sorkin.
Yeah.
And there's one thing that actually kind of like made, one of the things that made me appreciate West Wing more is, like, he got dinged really bad when that show was on for the cliche of the walk and talk, people speeding through hallways while delivering dialogue, and people are like, oh boy, what a crutch. But
Newsroom doesn't have that because it's not in the wing of a building. It's literally in a room. So most of the conversations are had by people sitting or standing and not moving. And holy crap, I had no idea how much difference that makes in terms of pacing. Like, those conversations just drag. They're so agonizing. But when they're walking, they somehow, it works. Walk and talk works. You feel more kinetic.
The bottom just falls out in this show. There's no more pretense to historical moments being designed by smart people. It's just a petty, gossipy media class. And because that bottom falls out, it's just sort of wackiness and attempts at witticisms and banter. And that's the worst, whatever you want to say about the rest of them, the worst type of Sorkin.
Yeah, so the thing about The West Wing is that they wrote a world.
Yeah.
They created a world. And like that at least requires, you know, writing. This one, I didn't know this before going into it, but they literally would just take shit from the headlines and not in a like Law and Order, you know, Special Victims Unit way, but in a like literally they would just go to Yahoo News and refresh every day.
Keyword news.
In the past. This show actually takes place in the past. The first season.
Yeah, because it wasn't. They weren't like keeping up with the fucking cycle.
It debuted in 2012, and all of the events happened in 2011. And so you basically somebody said it's like watching the old news with the director's commentary.
Yeah, it's like they just didn't hire writers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, it's for the people who were like, oh my God, I wonder what it was like when they were putting together coverage about the Tea Party. Yeah. Like all the shit that you don't remember or barely care about from the last 10 years, you're just like, huh, what if there was a sanctimonious sexist guy running around
and an
old man who shits himself constantly?
It's so much worse than that because it's like reliving the news stories of the very recent past via the medium of cable news, which is vomitous enough as it is. But the entire purpose of the show is like Aaron Sorkin and the creators and like everyone who like the main thrust of the show is like, remember these news events like the rise of the Tea Party? What if that was covered by responsible goddamn newsmen who told the news the right way? And it's like this like idea that like that, if only we could have had that, like maybe like history would have turned out different, even though it didn't. But like Aaron's like, okay, if I had the chance to talk to that Tea Party congressman, this is how I would set them straight.
And that just shows how impotent it is, because it's based on real history.
It's him imagining himself in the shower.
It's real. It's based on the actual events. So that means that he's like, what if there was real goddamn news coverage? But it doesn't impact anything. The history happens exactly the same way. Right. He's totally he's like,
oh,
the whole thing
God,
is a subrosa demonstration of his own absolute impotence. Because even though the world that he creates has ACN and Will McAvoy on it, the events happen the exact same way.
Oh, my God. You cannot escape the fates.
Yeah.
Actually, it's like the Odyssey. Never mind. I've decided it's good now.
Well, to give people an idea of why this is the case, why Jeff Newsroom is this avatar for a alternate reality in which a Sorkin type anchor had airtime every night, is because vaguely speaking, ACN is like CNN, I guess. And that's the channel that Will Newsroom is on. And in the first episode, which we'll get to, he has an epiphany that leads him to take the news more seriously. And the rest of the series is imagining a cable news channel that took the news seriously.
Didn't report the news, reported the goddamn news.
Exactly.
There's nothing that's more important in a democracy than a well-informed electorate.
I just want to make sure you know you're still on the side of the door.
When there's no information, or much worse, wrong information, it can lead to calamitous decisions and clobber any attempts at vigorous debate. That's why I produce the news, Leno.
I think Jay and I would rather be employed if it's all the same to you.
It's not all the same to me, you punk. I've come here to take your IQ and your talent and put it to some patriotic fucking use. And where does it say that a good news show can't be popular?
Nielsen ratings.
We're going to do a good news show and make it popular at the same time.
That is impossible.
Between your brains, charm, looks and affability, and my
refusal to live in reality. It's impossible.
You know what you left out of your sermon? That America is the only country on the planet that since its birth has said over and over and over that we can do better. It's part of our DNA.
That trash. To me is like the single thing that like I just couldn't get my head around watching the show, because at least in the West Wing, they're like glorifying people who are working in the White House, and like
you know, like yeah. the things that they're doing are like, you know, important or whatever.
And exist
like,
in a world that can be changed by their actions.
That's true.
Yeah. Up.
But he didn't think about that because he's not a good writer. He's like, okay, I'm going to rewrite all the fantasy scenarios I had in the shower every morning after watching the news. Oh, but guess what? The media doesn't actually change anything. He completely wrote that out of his fantasy.
Yeah, like the West Wing was his fantasy of like what a good government would be and the things they would do. And like you said, because he created a universe, he could populate it in which like new and novel things happen, or like he can script it according to how he thinks it would play out. This is like his ideal version of the news, but like the events are already set in stone, and it's just like the damage has been done, but like here's how I would have talked about them were I asked in 2011 about the Tea Party.
He's proving that his yearning is not to make the world better. It is an aesthetic preference.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sort of reminds me of the people, Ted Lieu, the representative who's famous for posting a lot.
Yeah, the posting rep.
He said, you know what, Mike Pence, you can have your stupid tax cut as long as Trump resigns and we restore honor to the office. It doesn't matter the events or the policies or the people thrown into the meat grinder, as long as there's this veneer of honor. The same horrible things that happened over the past 8 years can happen as long as there's this guy on TV going, Sir, do you believe global warming is man-made? Sir, do you have any decency?
So
that would make everything okay.
And there's another thing that I think contributes to it, which is that Sorkin, now obviously older than he was when he was writing The West Wing, is writing young characters. Like way that the hip, young,
my God,
adorkable was kind of the watchword.
Okay, I like to say, with all respect, that I don't feel I need to be supervised.
Okay.
You'll let me do it by myself?
No, I just meant, okay, I heard you say that.
Almost all of them having affairs with each other inside of the newsroom. And like the West Wing, the dialogue is super quick and the banter is flashy and it's all like shit coming out of a duck's ass. It's very fast and loose and you're just supposed to be wrapped up in the pure, like Matt said, sort of aesthetic of how these people are in this world. But every conversation is just this 80s guitar solo of dialogue that doesn't lead anywhere because, as we've discussed, it's just a bunch of media assholes running around.
Forgot?
Yes.
You have a staff. They can write these things down.
They can, but I have to remember to tell them to. Mm. So what do you say? You're my first and only choice.
What about Jerome?
He's in Bermuda.
Kathy?
It's her parents' 50th anniversary.
Taylor?
Bronchitis.
So?
Yes, you are my fourth and only choice.
I can't host Elliot's show. Don't be ridiculous.
You host your own show at 4:00.
About financial news.
You're expanding.
Oh, come on. I gained 4 freaking pounds.
No, Professor.
Right. Expanding.
Yeah.
That'll do. Let's get serious. I'll begin by saying that Will cries when he watches the movie Weedy.
No, I don't.
Cries like an onion.
Onions make you cry. They don't themselves experience emotion.
The way you experience emotion when you watch Rudy.
One scene, one moment, once in a while.
The Jersey scene?
Yes.
Everybody cries at the Jersey scene.
He'll have like a young woman like in her early 20s making references to the musical Gypsy, and a guy in his like late 70s or 80s saying the word douchebaggery. Just like off the cuff.
It's like a horrible melding where the old people are using stupid lingo.
Everyone is exactly Aaron Sorkin's age.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's all because everybody has the same mid century middle brow reference pool. Broadway musicals and, you know, the books of the week that people would, you know, read in the 60s or whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of like if the entire universe, if someone did the Get Out procedure to everyone in the world, except the brain implanted was a 62-year-old gay man who owns an antique shop in like a nice upstate New York town. And he's like, wow, this is just like Gilbert and Sullivan. He's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I got a little sharp, but like I said, The West Wing was about glorifying people like at the height of power and government. And so there's like a certain action there that you can wring out of even these fantasy scenarios. The thing I cannot get past with the newsroom, and that was like present in every single frame of the show for me, is that we're being asked to invest our attention, kind of like hopes and like everything into a guy who does an hour a night on cable fucking news. All the action in the story is around him sitting and reading shit off a teleprompter and making a cable news show every night. Like, it fucking matters. I think it makes more sense to introduce the characters as they
appear.
Yeah.
Right? As like, I think we should just describe the pilot episode.
Yeah.
And then sort of like go from there, and we'll pick out our sort of our favorite scenes and moments that showed up throughout the rest of the series, and we can
all right.
provide context okay, let's for start. The moment. Okay.
We got to talk
let's
about
get this fucking and,
but
blood
again,
carnival
I
going.
Cannot oversell enough how just more violently repellent this show was to me, even
at every level.
Even like compared to the West Wing.
I mean, it's like, okay, it's like it's slower. It has worse pacing. The dialogue is somehow worse. The misogyny we'll talk about is way more rancid. And just like the literal actors are uglier. Like that, it's yeah. that level. Like that, there's two young guys who are the younger like male leads,
Don and Jim. Jim,
and okay. they are both fucking trolls. Specifically, Don, who looks like he's got jaundice and tuberculosis.
Yeah, no,
he looks like Eugene Toombs from X Files.
Yeah,
no, and then Don, the other one, looks like the lesser Cuomo brother.
Yeah, he looks.
No, that's
Don. That's all Don. The opening scene, like the pilot of the newsroom. We've actually already described back on the West Wing episode because, Felix, you showed it to us after we were watching the West Wing, and it was like 3 minutes, and like, again, my eyes were bleeding while it was going on. I couldn't process what was happening. Then we finally got down to watching this whole pilot, which is like an hour and a half long.
It's so long.
To refresh your memory, the show begins with Jeff Newsroom on stage, flanked on his left and his right by just the typical ignorant, backbiting, back and forth, liberal and conservative political commentators. And they're blah, blah, blahing, like, you know, having the same old debates, the same old arguments that don't elevate anyone. And they're nasty and they're insulting and they're dumb. They're for dumb people.
People are asking questions on stage, like, you know, do you think war is justified? And Jeff is giving sort of pithy responses.
He's like, I think the New York Jets are justified.
Yeah. The house is packed, by the way, because people, of course, would be like, the news guy is talking to a conservative and a liberal? Where else could I see this? But so up to the microphone comes sorority girl. And she goes, I wish Southie was the president. She's like, Jeff Newsroom, why is America the greatest country ever? And triggered. That's this trigger war. Because Jeff Newsroom, he takes out the chopper and sprays everyone with truth.
Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is, there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite?
And then, but then the real, so you're like, okay, this is statistics. It's Sorkin being like, you know, I've actually read all the data and he's rattling off this stuff. But then the really infuriating part is halfway through when he's done yelling, he goes, so we're not the greatest country.
Sure used to be.
Goddamn right.
And then the second half.
We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed, we cared about our neighbors, we put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy.
During Jim Crow,
so good. Yeah.
Back when the country was ruled by men in short sleeve button up t-shirts and crew cuts.
Yeah, back when there were honorable public servants like Bull Connor.
He says some line about, like, you know, men were men, and like America, we knew we were the greatest country, so we didn't have to tell anyone about it.
That was never the case.
With NASA and the space program.
Yeah, we spent $1 zillion to kill a monkey in outer space out of competition.
Own the Russians.
We trained killers in South America because they were rude to a fruit company. Like, there was always imperialism in the... Shut the fuck up, Jeff.
No, there wasn't. It only happened when the news became
when
snarky.
The broads showed up, am I right? Yeah.
The Dulleses were actually... They founded Gawker.
So you see, just in that first scene, like something comes over Jeff Newsroom, and it's his like road to Damascus moment.
Well, also he has what you think is a hallucination of Emily Mortimer.
Yes, which brings us to
prompting him,
like his second lead. Yes, Mackenzie McHale, who will become his producer, his former lover.
All these people Scottish.
His former lover, who will become his producer on the newly revamped
News Night. Wow, I bet there's going to be a lot of conflict.
Uh-huh.
Amber has a great point. They are all Scottish. This is like Jim Webb was a consultant.
They're the purest Americans.
No, but we see just in that first scene where what really sets Jeff Newsroom off is a question from an ignorant, empty-headed, young woman.
Blonde.
A blonde woman. And... in there, it's like there's nothing worse on the Newsroom than just a woman who is frivolous, doesn't know what she's talking about, and getting in the way of the news and facts with her.
With her breasts and her hips.
I got my birth control all over the teleprompter. Can we do a report about Katy Perry?
No, you stupid whore.
So, like,
I'm still laughing at whom amongst us does not enjoy an instant gram.
You guys love your instant grams.
But we have, as we pointed out, every character on the show is Aaron Sorkin. It's a vehicle for him and some debate or some witty thought or, you know, dialogue that he's had in his mind that is just a demonstration of how correct he is. So, like, there's nothing that annoys him more than pop cultural references that he doesn't know about or get. So, like, anything that a woman is interested in, and even the slightest, can be dismissed wholly out of hand instantly by Jeff Newsroom as just being like,
he knows who they are. Like, Aaron Sorkin knows who they are, but he resents having to know what they are.
Right.
He resents that, like, there is, like, a celebrity culture.
Oh, yeah. He just burns him up. Why do I know this? Goddamn Kardashians are.
Yeah.
I don't know who all these UN general secretaries are, but I know the goddamn Kardashians.
Like, and the setup here is even more monstrous because, like,
general secretary.
Jeff Daniels is supposed to be this once great man who is, like, aspired to be Walter Cronkite, but, like, he's just been phoning it in, doing, you know, bullshit stories about the weather or Lady Gaga or whatever, but he's dying inside. Mm. And this one stupid broad just lights a fire inside him and sets him off and to tell the
truth.
But
enough about his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, to tell the truth. And then it's like a big moment. It blows up. It goes viral. And people are like, oh, wow. Like, who's
this? It gets
this,
thousands of hits on the web zone.
Who's this? Who's this Jeff Newsroom character? And, like, as we were watching it, the idea that that would happen, like a figure like Joe Scarborough or like Chris Matthews.
Heath Olbermann
and Matthews and Lawrence O'Donnell kind of all in one.
Yeah. Like, if one of those figures were to appear at like a college campus and was as fucking rude to like that person for no reason, like the headline would not be like, wow, brave newsman tells the truth.
Yeah, it would be Olbermann is unhinged.
Yeah,
what the
detestable
fuck?
Asshole loathed by all. That's the thing. The Jeff Newsroom character is so monstrous and so unlikable, but the show clearly thinks he's great.
Well, because, you know, I think Sorkin is somewhat self-aware that sometimes he's being a little bit sexist, or he's being a little dismissive of the people underneath him, but that he's an ordinary guy, you know? He's too busy with the damn truth to worry about the niceties.
And he's old school, you know?
He abuses his underlings.
Yeah.
At one point, he calls a South Asian employee Punjab and just yells it across the fucking office.
Yep.
And people are like, wow, he sure doesn't keep it politically correct. Like, you just yelled racism across your office.
So Sorkin is he rails against Gawker all the time, and it's like Gawker existed for someone like Jeff Newsroom. That's the exact villain that they would have taken on rightly.
Yeah. And I guarantee you Sorkin was one of the people who watched The Sopranos and was like, I like Tony because he's the boss.
But he's a better person than Jeff Newsroom. Tony is a better person to his underlings.
He's certainly more morally conflicted and like has...
Nicer guy.
Has nicer qualities better than Jeff Newsroom. Skills, yeah.
He wouldn't be like abusive to someone underneath him. So that would be considered low class for Tony Soprano.
So then
he's nicer to women.
In that first episode, I guess the thrust of it introduces us to all the characters, which is that there's going to be a news show where news is taken seriously, and Emily Mortimer is his ex, who there's a complicated past.
It's tough, but you know, she's the best goddamn woman. She's the best goddamn woman. Oh, yeah, no,
like, he comes in and like she's being shepherded by the other major character, the Sam Waterston character,
yes.
Who is
a terrible
Orville Redenbacher.
I'm sorry, we all love, you know,
DJ Matt Jack McCoy.
Jack McCoy. We all love
DJ Jack McCoy. Spin that fucking track.
We all love DA, Mr. Law and Order, Sam Waterston.
Nah,
goddamn,
all prosecutors are rats. Round them all.
But what Waterston is fucking awful. Phoning in this role to the nth degree.
He's phoning it in on an old school telephone with an ear horn because he's like.
It's always bobbling around, and
he's
just always
seems to be like apoplectic the whole time. He's like squawking. He's like a giant chicken, just squawking and flapping.
He wears a bow tie.
He wears a bow tie,
and he's like Sorkin's like view of like what the classic era of like newsman.
Yeah,
news
drinks
producer.
All the time. He's always having a scotch.
Drinks all the time.
He clearly has alcoholic dementia.
Like he, you know, he's like, I remember when I was covering the news in Vietnam, we saw a cute girl dance for us. And,
you know. Yeah. He's like, that's a terrible story, Grandpa. You're talking about going to a brothel for the GI.
I remember when we were in a little village called My Lai.
So he wants Mackenzie McHale, Jeff Newsroom's ex, to be his new producer, who's going to take him off the leash and go back to doing news the way it used to be. And when like he brings in, they introduce the Emily Mortimer character, it's just like, she's fresh back from Iraq and Afghanistan. She did two tours of the news over there.
Yeah. Sir, who is your executive producer? Yeah. You realize that people have been reprimanded by HR for asking that question to a female underling.
And so like she sort of brings her people with her, and like there's like a meshing of these the newsroom and like her people. And of course, and instantly Jeff Newsroom is like, no, you're fired. I'm not having this. I'm going to my agent right now. I have hiring control over everyone, and he's against it. There's this whole back and forth, but slowly but surely in the newsroom amidst all this griping and people being prima donnas, what's this? Oh, something coming over the wire? Something about a fire on an oil rig in the Gulf? Could it be the beginning of the Deepwater Horizon disaster in the Gulf of Mexico? Yes, it is. And that... probably the greatest environmental disaster in American history is the glue, the catalyst, the tinder, the match. I'm loosing all my metaphors because I'm a newsman right here. That unites this staff to come together and do the fucking news.
And it's more important than them.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
The news.
They realize.
They rise to the occasion of doing cable news about like an unfolding disaster.
Yeah.
Will McAvoy, Mao, Mackenzie McHale. Lin Bao. She can never
also,
fully
they
be
make
a
that
news
South
producer.
Asian character know a ridiculous amount about oil drilling for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Dev Patel plays the IT guy.
He's a South Indian techie. Mm-hmm. What a shock. I mean, wow. That's amazing casting.
And Jeff Newsroom thinks he's the IT guy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, which is endearing.
These are all good.
We're all supposed to
not
like
sense
that.
And then you have Allison
store.
Pill, who is the aforementioned underling,
she
who just enjoys
pill.
Getting
accurate.
Yelled at all the time. And
she's sort of like... She's always like adorably flustered and like walking
into doors. The first time he remembers her name, she just fucking comes.
Yeah. Well, that's a recurring theme of the show is that actually we never see the floor of the newsroom because it's ankle deep in pussy juice due to Jeff's epic monologues.
When Jeff gets off the air and puts on his statement leather blazer.
I wanted to bring that up. Do you notice that he only starts wearing the blazer after they start doing the real news?
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is what Sorkin thinks masculinity is. It's like if you're just abusive to women 95% of the time and then be slightly nice to them 5% of the time, they will fucking come. And that is a description of how you inscribe Stockholm Syndrome on someone.
Well, I remember in one of the last ones, there were two scenes in a row where I think it was Olivia Munn's character first, and then probably Mackenzie or someone else. They both call a guy they're talking to an idiot. They call you're a big dumb dumb, and that to him is like, I've done my feminism for the day. That is almost a little bit too much feminism, but in one episode. Because
meanwhile, in terms of like actual plot stuff, all of the like biggest fuck ups,
it is mostly
are all
women.
Done by women, and the women always like. Are hysterical, basically.
I think it's most offensive in the Mackenzie character because she, while he gives her 8 PhDs and she's been in Iraq and all this stuff, literally in the second episode, she doesn't know how to use email and she replies all some private message to Jeff, to the whole staff, and then they all know about their affair.
We stood in my office this morning and I said, under no circumstances do I want anyone here to know what happened. And you said, yes, and yes, again. And it really seemed like you understood. And then you sent an email explaining in some detail what happened. And then you copied 47 reporters
on it. Can I go into your office?
You know how sometimes something happens in an instant that's so astonishing you just shut down?
Of course, that's understood.
That doesn't fucking happen to me!
How would she know email? She's been busy doing the news in Afghanistan.
Similarly, like, carrying over from the West Wing, is that like if you portray female characters who are like highly competent and like highly accomplished in like some professional field, you can show them to be complete klutzes, ditzes, and just sort of frivolous people in every other regard. And it's just like...
They're all defined by the relationships. Like, that's all they really care about. And it affects their work and everything else.
Mortimer and Allison Pill, it's a horrible... Just to watch it is, like, really makes your skin crawl.
Yeah. Meanwhile, those lizard men are, like, only lightly touched by the romantic travails.
Yeah. I mean, every scene with every woman is, they're like, I accidentally changed the ACN logo to a swastika. And, you know, one of the male characters is like, I'm going to fuck that stupid out of you, you dumb whore, with the news. I eat a pussy every night. It's called the Wall Street Journal. I can find the G-spot. It's called the opinion page. You know what makes a woman come? Diverse views. I don't mumble the alphabet into her clit. I mumble the masthead for the New York Times.
This man has a sickness.
So, so the news team assembles, and they coalesce assemble around an important news story, and like they show them, like they come together to like to do it. Like, and like their first broadcast is completely off the cuff. Emily Mortimer is just like in the control room. She's got the headset on. She's like, "Will, I'm in your ear. Listen to me very closely. Whatever happens tonight, do the goddamn news." and they just like they do some bullshit where like he like interviews someone from like the Interior Minerals Department or some government geologist, and he's like, sir, do you have adequate funding to inspect every oil rig? And he's like, I guess not. Thank you, sir, for your time. And then, like, he gets to the end of what is a completely standard hour of cable news. If you've ever watched anything on CNN or MSNBC, it would be exactly the same. He gets done. He says, thank you. I'm Jeff Newsroom, and good night. As soon as he does, the entire newsroom, from the control room to, like, the people on the floor, give him a fucking standing ovation. And I was just watching this, like, why?
Well, wouldn't you?
Because he did his news. Job. He gets
he did
paid
the
millions.
Goddamn news. What the fuck do you want?
But he did it for real.
He did the goddamn news.
This is the over, like, again, this is the overarching thing from, like, the incredible, like, opening credit sequence, which, like, cuts in pictures of, like, Murrow.
News.
And
the very first thing you see, it's all a montage of old news footage, and the first thing on the screen is all covering the entire screen is the word news.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the thing about them applauding for him doing a competent news broadcast is like, what was he like before this broadcast? Like during 9/11, he's like, so how does this affect the celebs? is DMX all right?
They're like, Jeff, we're getting reports of a plane crash in Lower Manhattan. No, I'm doing this Summer of the Sharks story right now. Thank you very much, Little Missy. Watching this show and the absurd regard it has for fucking cable news people. Remember we were complaining about how the West Wing held, like, the White House communications director in a disgustingly high regard? This show is doing it about Keith Olbermann.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of something that Alexander Coburn once wrote about like the difference between American and British journalists, is that like American journalists still, like, have this idea, largely probably because like Woodward and Bernstein, probably that like journalism is like a high calling, or that it's some sort of like crusade to make like the world a better place. And he said, you can't find a single journalist in England who isn't completely shit-faced by 3 or 4 in the afternoon, because like they can't bear living with the shame of what they actually do for a living.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the early half of the 20th century, journalism was considered basically a racket. And it really was Watergate that gave these idiots the idea that they were like a fucking holy paladin waging a war for truth.
Yeah.
And that is the metaphor that Sorkin and the show goes with, is Don Quixote.
Yes.
It's like Jeff Newsroom as Don Quixote, and then he's waging a war, as he says over and over again, for civility.
Yeah.
Or decency or something like that.
But again, like, Don Quixote was delusional.
Yeah, that's why it's a comedic book.
Does anyone read that book?
It's about an asshole, like a guy who behaves like... I mean, I guess Jeff Newsroom...
They're windmills, you fucking asshole. Someone take him home.
So... I think now, like, okay, you know the setup. I think we know most of the main players.
Yeah.
So I think we're just going to take you now through our greatest hits of our last 72 hours of torturing ourselves with The Newsroom. So we described the pilot episode. The next episode I'd like to talk about, I think, is episode 3 of the first season, which is about Jeff Newsroom choosing to do a show in which he apologizes for doing the news badly in the past. And this is happening in the background of the rise of the Tea Party and his sort of one-man crusade against what's happening to his Republican Party.
Because he's a good Republican.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
They say
he's
that every episode.
Rockefeller Republican.
No, that he makes a point of saying over and over again, I'm a Republican from Nebraska, but you know what? Like, these Republicans... They're not real Republicans. They're radicals.
The Tea Party movie was hijacked. He goes in this whole thing about how it was hijacked.
I believe the one where they compared SDS to the Tea Party.
Yes.
It's just like the SDS,
those radicals,
the Tea Party
that wanted to, you know, desegregate.
And then he goes like, he's like, look, I'm a Republican. I believe in like limited government and like common sense. I just don't think hurricanes are caused by gay marriage. Like, I believe hurricanes are caused by barometric pressure and not gay marriage.
Yeah. You know, those moderate Republicans like Nelson Rockefeller, who puts black people in a cage forever for having 10 grams of marijuana. Those respectable moderates who expand NATO to every end of the earth and drop fire on Vietnamese children. The logical ones.
But like, yeah, like they have to belabor this point that he's like, you know, a socially moderate Republican. Like it's going to make this fictional character's owns of fictional Tea Party representatives all the more weighty, because it's just like, I'm not just some dumb liberal woman.
And it is a West Wing, it's a plank of the West Wing ideology, obviously, because as Amber said in that episode, it shows that he's not ideological, that he's gone beyond he's not confined to the ideology of right or left, because he's a Republican, but he's actually going out
ideology, and it's the fucking news.
Yes. In the background of him doing the news and going real hard at these liars and prevaricators on embarrassing...
In his own party?
Yeah, embarrassing congressmen on his cable news show. Mm-hmm. The higher-ups at the network, the corporate, the bosses are like, this Jeff Newsroom's gone too far. The way he's embarrassing politicians and getting ratings on our cable news show... Can't happen.
Jane Fonda is the, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, Jane Fonda's
the head of the network. She can hang out with the guys, and she's quiet for most of this episode. She's just watching her assistants attack Sam Waterston, and Sam Waterston refuses to stop doing the news, and they plead and beg. Finally,
stop doing the news.
And then finally, it ends, and he's bobbling his head around going like, you know,
we're doing it the way we're supposed to. I've been doing news ever since the Kaiser ascended.
At one point they say, like, Jane Fonda gets mad with him and she goes, yeah, you're doing the news. News for the left. And he goes, no, news for the center. And she scoffs at him like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then he goes, the facts are the center.
Yes. And Jane Fonda eventually says, he's saying too many things that, you know, we answer to corporations and the corporate overlords that we
Charles
have.
And David Koch.
Yeah, Koch. And you think about what Jeff Newsroom has been saying up until that point. It's like, that the Constitution is good and gay marriage is okay. And it's like, these are not things that this is what
corporations are threatened by. Yeah,
yeah. It's not like he's going up there saying that, like, you know, we need to seize the means of production, or like, you know, it, like a moderately liberal opinion on labor. He's just saying banal things that Aaron Sorkin thinks threatens corporations, that like the theory of evolution is something corporations are trying to
keep Charles and David Koch saw like Keith Olbermann be like, actually, sir, Ben Franklin was a deist. They'd get on the phone to like the head of Viacom and be like, shut it down.
Well, that's the funny thing, is that he owns all these dipshit Tea Party people, but he owns them in a way that shows that this motherfucker is obsessed with cable news, but he clearly doesn't watch it, because none of the arguments happen the way that cable news arguments do. Jeff Newsroom asks a question, and then these dopes all answer it in the affirmative. It's like, would you agree with this? And they say, yes, I would. And he goes, well, would you agree with this? And they go, of course. And they're like, well, if you believe in this and this, then what about this? And they're just like, well, it's like, that's not how cable news conversations happen.
It's just his fantasy. It's just his fantasy.
Yeah, but it's like, he's like, oh, man, he'd say this, and then I'd say this, and then boom.
Well, yeah,
that's like all it is.
It's like verbal Krav Maga. It's like, well, you know, 75% of the time in a specific Boeing model, if a guy pointed an M4 at me, I'd disarm him. It's the same thing. If you follow my leading question, you know, would Jesus Christ pay his taxes or something? Like, any of these fucking trained Republican lizards would go down that path.
Yeah, because they all, when you ask them a yes or no question, they just filibuster and speak like orthogonally to the question until their time is up. That's what they do.
And I just want to like make a point about like Jane Fonda gets this like interminable monologue that again is this like very ham-fisted reference to the Ned Beatty scene in Network. And I'm sure Aaron Sorkin has like, you wouldn't have to search far for him saying something like, Patty Chayefsky is considered a hero of mine.
Personal hero.
Yeah, personal hero of mine. But what she does is tell this like incredibly labored joke about Jesus and Moses playing golf that takes fucking forever and like
not connected.
And doesn't and isn't connected to anything.
It's
and
just a very realistic interaction with an old person. To be fair,
but to the point about Network, I think it speaks to like the mind at work here, the mind of the genius himself, Aaron Sorkin, who I'm pretty sure interpreted Network as a movie about how this Howard Beale character was just. He just had his moment of truth telling, and he told too much truth. Not that he was always a fucking hollow, buffoonish
and
figure.
And mentally ill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very obviously mentally ill in the movie.
Right. So then, like, Sam Waterston's character is getting pressure from the suits because Jeff Newsroom is going too hard at the Tea Party, and she's like, I have business in front of this Congress. So there's that going on. And then Jeff does his, like, a personal comment now. In the past, I've covered stories about pregnancy, Lady Gaga, the wage gap, childcare, healthcare,
the female
nursing,
orgasm,
FGM,
wandering wombs.
But I'd like to apologize. And like one of the things he's like, in the past, I've done stories that did not, like, you know, lift us up to a higher ground, that did not tell the truth about our strength as a people. And I'm like, these aren't facts. Like, what are you talking about?
He also doesn't mention the Iraq War.
He doesn't mention Iraq War or Wall Street or any specific failure of failures of journalism.
Because he doesn't think that's when he thinks that, he's really thinking of like having a segment about the Kardashians. For him, that's way the Kardashians, like being on the Network News channel, is worse to him than the Iraq War, in terms of like,
I think you're probably
journalistic malpractice. Yeah. He absolutely cares more about that.
Absolutely.
Keep in mind, Aaron Sorkin, I believe, I know this for a fact. In one point, he did say that out of all like news, like opinion writers or columnists, he likes Peggy Noonan more than anyone. So,
oh my, what is the fuck?
Yeah, keep that in mind. So Jeff apologizes for doing the bad news, and he's like, we are rededicating our efforts to, like, you know, do the news the way it should be, the way it used to be, with men. There were men who did the news, great men. They had names. Names like Murrow, Cronkite, Rather, Brokaw, Russert, and he says Buckley in that mix. We had to rewind it. We were like, wait, Buckley wasn't really a newsman. He was a fucking lizard commentator.
Who is pro-segregation?
Yeah, he actually throws in
William, I mean, again, to like jerk off all these like great network news figures like Walter Cronkite or Dan Rather is a bit much to begin with. But he throws in William F. Buckley and Tim Russert onto this list of fucking the immortal greats of American news TV journalism. And it's like,
nothing says reasoned civil debate like threatening to punch a goddamn queer right in the face.
He stood up to the queers.
Or even worse than that, Tim Russert's fucking appallingly weak, like,
yeah, like if you want to complain about the news turning into like empty entertainment, that was Russert's entire deal, was yep. How do I turn these interviews into appointment television? And it was with pointless gotchas that made people momentarily awkward, but then, did not impose any actual insight on it.
And then talked about his dad for like the other half. Big Russ. Yeah. Okay, so it's like this is the third episode now of the show, and it's already had some of the most revolting things I've ever seen on TV. Going to episode 4 now. Yeah. This is where it gets good. This is where like one of the main antagonists.
This
of,
is my
of
favorite
the show
episode.
Has been revealed. Episode 4 begins on New Year's Eve. It's the New Year's Eve party in the ACN newsroom. Will McAvoy is in a $3,000 tuxedo, alone in his office smoking a cigarette, because goddamn it. Parties are stupid and frivolous. Jeff, newsroom, come outside. It's New Year's Eve, sir. News, yes, sir. Surely there's no news to be had. And he's like, oh, leave me alone. The people out there are having fun and socializing. So then he finally comes out of his news cave, and the Olivia Munn character like begins bantering with him about like, he's like, why doesn't he go just talk to someone at a party? This is what, it's New Year's Eve. This is what you do. And he's like, oh, do people actually do that? Oh, I guess. A little back and forth. And then she's like, oh, look over there. Like, here's a woman who's clearly at this New Year's Eve party alone. She looks gorgeous and single and unaccompanied. She's just begging for a tall, handsome newsman to come up and tell her the facts.
Put his news into her.
And the character he approaches is played by Hope Davis. And he comes up to her and they begin flirting. And basically, after he says, hi, my name's Jeff Newsroom, I host Newsnight, she's just like, just, she goes, I'll tell you what, why don't you kiss me at midnight and we'll see where it goes from there. Just offering herself to him and just like falling for him. And he's like, you know, getting ready to like, you know, lean in, and she distracts
him. By the way, Jeff Newsroom is supposed to be like, this is what Aaron Sorkin thinks a handsome man looks like.
And he just looks like an old man.
Well,
I mean,
because Amber, what you said that Emily Mortimer says in the first episode, if we took my news skills and your looks and rugged jaw, and it's like the man is not, he's, Jeff Daniels is not an ugly man.
He just
man,
looks like any older man.
He's just an old, little
He's lower than puppy. Average. I'm sorry. I'm going to weigh in here. He's below average.
But in this, he's King Solomon. Like, Jeff Daniels and any woman, it's like Song of Songs.
Right, Will. She's throwing herself at him.
She's throbbing. Her body is vibrating standing next to him.
And then she's like, yeah, I just have to do one thing tomorrow. I got to finish up my hit piece on the
one
new
of the
house.
Real Housewives.
One of the Real Housewives. And then people are counting down 2 years. Yeah.
Nine.
And he's like, and she starts to lean in. He goes, what do you mean hit piece? She's like, you know, a hit piece. Or no, a takedown piece where you take somebody down. And then it's like, one. And she's about to hit. And he literally takes his palm and shoves her face away. What? And he's disgusted with the idea of a hit piece and that she would ever think to debase the title of journalist with conduct such as that. And he just then reams her out.
You and I do the same thing for a living.
That's nuts, Nina. I try to expose the truth about things that are of national importance.
Well, I'm trying to expose the truth about the fact that Brittany might have had a daughter when she was a teenager, who's now 10 possibly, and being taken care of by her mother.
Why is that the concern of anyone except for Brittany,
it's not
her
a
hypothetical
concern.
Daughter,
it's
and her mother?
It's entertainment.
Okay, well, here's the thing, though. It shouldn't be.
Is that right?
Of course it's right. You know it's right. You know right from wrong.
Everybody said you were like this.
Immediately begins drilling her with questions about like why anyone should care about a Real Housewives in New Jersey. Why would you be mean to this Real Housewife in New Jersey? Why would you, quote, take her down? And she's like, okay, all right, I see this isn't going anywhere.
Yeah. She's an entertainment columnist.
So we find out Hope Davis's character is like a gossip columnist for this rag called TMI that's supposed to be like TMZ or fucking just the stand-in for bad tabloid, you know,
chick
news
shit.
Culture. Yeah, exactly. Then throughout the rest of this episode, if that first scene wasn't enough, you get two more instances of Jeff Newsroom turning down women and what it would otherwise be a sure thing because they behave in a way that offends his news sensibilities.
Which is in the script, by the way. Hope Davis says, "You just turned down a sure thing." Like, he's making the woman say that.
Yeah. There are two other, real quick. He's having drinks with one woman, and then he starts telling her about how he got turned down by the other woman because he slandered one of the Real Housewives in New Jersey. Begins to tell him, "Oh, I love that show. It's so funny. Oh, she's having an affair with her yoga instructor," and begins reaming off all of her dumb chick interests.
Yes.
And then he's just like, "Check, please."
Yes.
Then he has another date in his apartment, like taking her dress off, played by Catherine Han, by the way, mm-hmm. in one of the many thankless roles that she had to do before she blew up now, and deservedly so. But she's like, "Oh, hey, like you're fun and sexy. Like, hey, do you smoke? Like, would you like to smoke some weed?" And he's like, "I haven't in a while, but you know, sure, why not? Fucking, I'm doing the news now, so might as well expand my mind." She's like, "Okay, great. Go in my purse. It's in the pocket or whatever. I have a joint there for us." So he goes in her purse and then immediately sees a fucking a small ladylike handgun in there.
Yeah,
and she's in the other room, like taking her clothes off, and he's like, "Excuse me, honey, what's this?" And like the woman he just brought to his house, he is now standing in the living room holding her gun and basically pointing it at her. He's like, "Excuse me."
Yeah.
Like, can you explain this, Jeff?
I think he had just been on TV that night going to town about gun
NRA.
Control.
Yeah.
And against the NRA. And then she goes, "Look, buddy, I saw you tonight. I think you're great, but you're totally wrong on guns."
No, what she says is, "I work for Hillary. But by the way, you're totally wrong on guns."
She says, "I'm as liberal as you get. Like, I'm as lefty as you get, but you're wrong on guns." And then he, like, you know, owns her with logic, but not quite enough, because she says, "Well, if I'm walking down the street and a guy wants to rape me, this is happening." And she points the gun, and he's unloaded it at that point, because he just decided in front of her to unload her own gun without her permission. And then she's pointing the gun at him, and he goes, "Actually, this is happening." And he smacks the gun out of her hand. It flies up and lands in his hand, and then he's pointing it at her point blank in his apartment.
"Here's the thing.
Yeah, yeah. I saw the show tonight. I'm a liberal as liberal. I work for Hillary. You were dead wrong on guns."
"I didn't take a position on guns. I took a position on lying. I came out against it."
"Well, if I'm walking the streets of Manhattan at night and a guy your size wants to rape me, then this is going to happen."
"Actually, statistics show that this is going to happen."
"Is it wrong that I'm turned on by that?"
"Yes."
I gotta say, the anti-gun Republican that Sorkin is fantasizing about right now.
David Cumb.
Absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, no, none of these. It is a non-existent creature. Like
David Frum.
Yeah, I guess
that's true. David Frum is very anti-gun.
He's from Canada, though.
But I'm just glad the Jeff Good newsroom took that opportunity to let that woman know, "Look, if I want to rape you, it's going to happen."
You're not doing shit about it.
Yeah, there is no escaping this.
I mean, also, it's like if a gun fell out of a woman's purse and I was hooking up with her, that would be so fucking hot. If a woman like brought an aircraft carrier or like a fucking anti-air gun or a Predator drone,
she brought
my
an
apartment.
Aircraft carrier. That'd be very impressive.
Yeah. Well, also later, you know, he gets in trouble because now the gossip columnist, "Women Be Lying."
Yeah.
Hope Davis, the bitch gossip columnist who is only mad at him because he turned her down, she's spreading rumors about him, and then that ends up in the papers. This woman and
women only dislike you because you reject them sexually.
She's like, they're all crowded around the tabloid paper that they picked up, going like, "Do you see what's in here? You pointed a gun at a woman," and he goes, "I didn't point a gun at her. I was disarming it and showing her how she could." It's like that's supposed to
get raped.
That's supposed to be the viewers are supposed to go, "Yeah, come on, hear Jeff out." But it's like, no, he did point a gun at a woman, point blank in her apartment.
"I was showing her how powerful I am and how she's nothing and I could crush her at any time."
She's totally normal.
I don't even remember the rest of that episode, but like
it's
that
good stuff.
It's all good.
All right, so where are we going after that? The Bin Laden episode?
Yeah, Bin Laden. Ooh,
wow. No, the Gabby Giffords episode.
Oh,
right. No, that's the end of this episode.
Line.
No, okay. The Gabby Giffords is at the end of this one, episode 4. So like their actual news event that comes is the Gabby Giffords shooting, right? And like they're doing the news broadcast as it happens. And like the question is she dead or is she alive? And like the big pressure is like certain other news outlets are reporting that she's dead. And like Jeff Newsroom is a real goddamn newsman. Is like, that's a person. I'm not, unless I hear it from a doctor, I'm not putting it on the news. And like some guy from like corporate comes down who's like, Jeff.
That bitch is dead.
She's dead. You tell her family that she's dead right now. We're losing a half a point of ratings. You're done. And he just like stares him down. And like as this is happening, like some guy that just gets on the phone, like doctor says she's in stable condition going into surgery. And he's like, doctors are reporting now. And then he does the news. Gets the story right. And then, like, they cut to commercial, and he's like, everybody get in here. Everybody get in here. And there's this moment where, like, he says to his producer.
Yeah, because he stood by him.
His producer stood by him, like, his decision not to go on air with Gabby Giffords being dead. And he goes, what's the line?
He goes, Don, you're a goddamn newsman, and punch me in the face if I ever say different.
That's the inverse of what Buckley said to the dog.
Yeah.
You tell Leona that if she wants me out of this chair, she better bring more than just a couple of guys.
That's exactly what I'll fucking tell her.
I'm not fucking around, Charlie.
Feet of fucking steel.
Matt.
I'm sorry.
It's not your fault.
I fucked everything up.
It's gonna be all right.
What the fuck is going on?
You're a fucking newsman, Don. I ever tell you otherwise, you punch me in the face.
And then, like, the sister to that scene, the real quick one, it comes in another episode where it's the last episode, last scene of the episode. They've just got done covering the midterm elections, which coincidentally the Tea Party absolutely romped
after all in. That owning, after all those montages of newsroom they're crushing
all,
these people.
It's like 2 a.m, they're all sitting around the bar, and Jeff Newsroom just raises a glass and goes, I love doing the news. And they literally give a toast to the news.
Yes.
Yeah, they do.
And you may have seen, we actually posted a video of us watching it. And it was like he raises the glass, like the sentence isn't even out of his mouth, and then it's just about a minute straight of us just screaming and cackling, because that was
such
an honest reaction
to
that scene.
That was the first no touch cum in my life.
The way you, like, I mean, I love my job, I love you guys, I love journalism. But the news, like most of the news is like genocide and
there's
shit.
There's a lot about news. There's not a lot about journalism.
Yeah, it's like people getting shot in ditches and killed with drone strikes, or people being wiped out by natural disasters.
Well, and no one's ever doing anything investigative. It's always just chasing whatever's
going
on. You
say that, but in the final, one of the final episodes, Jeff, which is one of the more ridiculous strains, has a source that he won't give. He's an anchor,
yeah.
And he has
when was
a
the last
source.
Time one of those bubble-headed
so
dipshits.
So Jeff is
had
doing some
source.
Investigation.
Sorry, how long have you recorded? So hour.
Jesus. Oh, wow. I knew
okay,
it would
for
go
like,
on.
We have to talk about the finale. Yeah.
For the sake of time,
we only have a couple things left.
We should talk about the Bin Laden one.
Go.
Bin Laden one was pretty good with
okay,
the
fucking
let's
cops. Let's talk about the Bin Laden episode.
All right, we'll do Bin Laden, Dead Dad, last episode. That should be 10, 20 minutes tops.
Yeah.
All right, so the Bin Laden episode rules. So the episode is called 5-1 because Aaron Sorkin is under the delusion that the death of Bin Laden would be a generational defining event. Like, you'd be able to come up to somebody now and say, where were you on 5-1? And they say, what the fuck are you talking about?
I don't remember, actually.
No, I don't know. People were like, oh, Bin Laden's dead.
I was watching the dang news.
Yeah.
You were making the dang news.
I was making love to the news is what I was doing. So... starts. It's a party. They're celebrating their year on the air, and they're. It, by the way, it looks like a terrible party. It looks like you're. It looks like the.
Of course, it's a media.
It
party.
Looks like the party you dream of going to as like a nerdy freshman in college.
Yeah,
like it's, they're like jostling like newsrooms playing a guitar.
Yeah, they're playing Guitar Hero. There's a guy playing chess there.
Yes.
And it's, this is the most depressing, saddest part.
It's so sad.
And Jeff Newsroom has acquired edibles from the non-white news employee. <Yeah.
laughs> Like, yo, Jeff, you down.
Yeah, and he accidentally
eats too many. Say the N-word, Jeff.
Which is just a classic move. I ate too many drugs.
Yeah.
And so then while they're there, Sam Waterston gets the news. The news man gets the news. From a source that something big's coming. And then they find out the president's going to be speaking in about 2 hours, breaking into all broadcasts. So they're like, something's up. So they have to go back to the studio because they're the A-team. Whoever's there, fuck them. The A-team has to go there. All of them.
Yeah. And Jeff Newsroom has a bodyguard during some episode arc where people want to kill him for making the news. And so he runs out of his bodyguard's car. His bodyguard's black. And the bodyguard comes out and yells, like, Jeff, come back here. You can't go on these streets. You're on drugs. And these two, like, you know, racist cops come up to him and, you know, force him up against the car and frisk him and shit. And that's important later on.
Can I bring up what Matt brought up just before I go to the bathroom about the... The B team, it wasn't the B team of the news they interrupted. It was like a TMZ show. There was this woman in this like thin cut top who was out there and she's like, Madonna got new boobs. And then like Yeah, Don, the lizard Cuomo, lizard boy, runs out. He's like, get the fuck off my set, twat.
Because no, he's not. No, he's on the airplane.
Oh, right. No, it wasn't Don. It was the other freakish man.
Yeah. So Jeff Newsom is running high through the streets of Manhattan to get back to the news.
Among us.
And Sam Waterston's trying to confirm with his sources so they can say what it was before the announcement by Obama. And then three of them are stuck on a tarmac on an airplane, including the lizard man. And they're like, we got to get off. But they're stuck on the tarmac. They can't get to the fucking gate. And they're like, oh, my God, our phones are blowing up. Things are happening. We got to find out. And the lizard guy keeps wanting to get up to go to his talk to his other person. And this stewardess keeps saying, you can't do that. It's fucking FAA regulations. And he's just an abusive shithead to her the
another
whole time.
Another woman stopping him. And then he's like, hold on a second. I have a box cutter. Let's charge the cockpit.
And if you remember the first episode of The West Wing, there's also a fucking scene where the guy proves his point by logic that you can use your phone on an airplane. And it's just like, that's Sorkin's ideology. He's mad about airplane regulation.
Well, you know, he's been told to turn off his stupid phone a billion times, and it fills him with rage every time he has to do it. So while that's happening, eventually they get to the studio. Will McAvoy has an awful, awful, like, high scene where Jeff Daniels pretends to be high, and he's like, I'm high. He literally says, like, I'm high.
Yeah.
And he's giggling. It's like, it's worse than Reefer Madness. It's brutally terrible. And then finally, they're like, oh, what about it? What about it? What do we say?
Aaron Sorkin only does uppers, to be fair.
And they're all like, should we go forward? And finally, the big triumph of the episode is that they report that Bin Laden's been killed 5 minutes before the president comes on and says it. So it's like, holy shit.
Which is the whole stupid, supposedly stupid ratings chasing ideology that he's railing against.
Yeah.
Is that you got to be there first. And so, yeah, they were right too, but the speed of 5 minutes shouldn't matter.
Wait for him to fucking talk. What difference does it make?
It also typifies how low stakes and boring this fucking show is.
Super
There's no
show.
Drama it's or tension
boring.
About the things that happened. We all know how that went down. Oh. It's just the most dramatic thing that can happen is, oh, we fucked up the news, or oh, we got the news 5 minutes before a competitor got the news.
I remember now what the closest thing the episode does to a justification for why they care. Somebody says to Mackenzie, who cares, it's 5 minutes, and she goes, I hate Bin Laden, I hate the idea of having him alive for one more minute.
Oh my god,
that's a good reason to jump the gun. Yeah.
It cuts to the other newsrooms and they're like, I can't believe he's dead. I'm gonna miss him so much.
He got me into news at those. The end of the episode is one of the most despicable things I've ever seen on television. First, you see the B plot on the airplane where the guy's screaming at the stewardess, and the stewardess gets the pilots, and the pilots come out because he just got the news that Bin Laden's dead on his phone. And then he just looks at the pilots and says, "Looks at their stripes. There's a close up on the stripes on the pilot's fucking shoulders, and then of the little jewel pin.
Yeah,
and
the jewelry that they wear.
And then he says, gentlemen, there's something you need to hear. We got him for you. And then, even on the plane, the guy is still cruel to the stewardess for no reason, while congratulating the pilots. And it's like,
more fucking flight attendants died on 9/11 than pilots.
Yeah, they're also on planes.
Actually, no flight attendants died on 9/11. That's sort of the weird thing about it.
No Jewish flight attendants.
Triple parentheses flight attendants. You know that Donald Trump's daughter-in-law got him to go to the flight attendant country this week.
So, but my theory is that the whole episode, calling it 5-1 and all of this shit, it's just the liberal posturing that took place after they got their asses kicked in 2004, where they're like, how may we be jingoistic? Oh, we got him, and it was the black president, the college professor president who got them. And then the end of the fucking credits, there's no music, it's just Obama's speech announcing that we got Bin Laden, the speech that nobody remembers.
One cared.
But like, to the point about like, it probably bums out the people who are fans of the show a lot that, like, you know, killing Bin Laden wasn't as big a deal as 9/11 itself.
Shouldn't they balance each other out?
Yeah, that's the moment we totally redeemed ourselves as a country. And it just reminds me of in the episode we just watched from like the very final episode of the show, there's a scene where like the guys who take over the website get fucking owned by Dev Patel, who like comes back from vacation or something to be
He wasn't on vacation. He was hiding out because he was like Snowden in this timeline.
Oh, okay. All right. And like he walks in on them when they're trying to come up with a listicle of like the 9 most overrated movies. And he's like, yeah, I see what you're doing. You make me sick. Every day I look at these lists where you're taking down fine movies like Avatar and The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Why is underrated, why is that better than overrated? Oh, no, why not underrated? Why not underrated? Why
overrated?
Yeah,
his problem wasn't that it's bullshit listicle content, but that it was negative.
Yeah.
Bullshit
because,
listicle
because the real the real protagonist of that scene is not on stage. It is the writers and directors of those fine films who have to read bullshit negative criticism of it.
The only thing that's germane about the ending of the first season is that they bring everything full circle by having the dumb sorority bitch come and work for Jeff Newsroom as his intern to be
servant. That and I almost died. Felix instantly grammed it. When you think of what that video did in the world that they've created, it was like a billion hits. It was a hugely viral video. And it's him just screaming at this woman and just destroying her. It's her humiliating. I mean, I can't imagine how humiliating that would be. But because of his principle and belief in news that is revealed over the course of the episode, she comes to work for him. Mm-hmm. She's like, I will let you spit in my face and I will literally carry water for you. At one scene, they show her like giving him a water in between takes because of how awesome you are at the news.
Sorority girl!
Don't be scared.
You're the girl, right?
I'm Jennifer Johnson.
Just graduated Northwestern?
Stay calm.
A
year early.
You asked me that moronic question, and then my world came apart, and she came here, and I landed in the tabloids, and I got death threats, and my job is constantly in jeopardy, and you ruined my life?
Again, just stay calm.
Yes, that was me. What the hell are you doing here?
This is what Sorkin thinks of women. If you abuse them long enough and then show them one smidgen of kindness, literally how you inscribe fucking Stockholm Syndrome upon someone, that's how you build lasting relationships
with female
colleagues.
There's an ingredient you're missing in there, though, which is logic.
Yeah.
He abuses her with logic so that she sees the logic underneath.
He just beats her with a ruler and a dictionary.
Yes.
If you abuse them with logic, they will be buried alive with you in your news tomb when you enter the news afterlife.
Okay, we completely
skip second season two. The only thing we need to know about the second season is that Maggie, the dizzy blonde who's too preoccupied with her vagina and her boyfriends to do the news right, fucks up royally, and the whole second season is about their entire news, credibility being destroyed.
Yeah.
So that's the arc that we missed for the second season.
Okay.
And then the third season is truncated, so we saw most of it.
Yeah. There's two things from.
Stop flicking the letter.
That picks up on the mic.
Sorry.
Children.
You're just playing with the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah. We're almost there, guys.
You're just an older child. You're just a slightly older child.
Let's finish this goddamn broadcast.
This is like doing the midterm elections. This is what it feels like.
We should stress to the listeners that we've watched at least 12 hours of the newsroom.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm sorry if we sound a little taxed.
And we
did this for you.
Yeah.
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 We're goddamn podcast.
Punch us in the face.
Also, we're all operating on like a brick of hash.
We literally like, we watched 3 episodes in a row earlier this week, and Will was like, I can't do it again. And I was like, God damn it, Will. We have a responsibility to our listeners. To say that Jeff Newsroom has slaves.
Okay, 2 moments from 1 episode of season 3 that has to be addressed. The first is Jeff Newsroom's jail room encounter with his dad's ghost or figment of his imagination. Jeff Newsroom is incarcerated because he's too much of a newsman to give up his source about, I don't know,
who cares?
Felix joke that I'm just gonna have to ventriloquize in case he doesn't remember. Jeff enters the prison and Felix shouted out,
"Oh yeah, newsman walking here."
So Jeff Daniels, Jeff Newsroom gets put in jail, and like his cellie is this like sort of cagey like white guy who's like,
You're some kind of big city newsman, aren't you?
That's
Jew news for me. Like, and you know, like peppering him with questions and shit, and like he's being, you know, as he always is to everyone who is around him, imperious and condescending and dismissive. And he's like talking in there, and then the guards like, you know, drag their batons across the bars, and they're like, keep that news down in there.
yeah, he's sending kites with the news on it to people. It's like it's Oz, but he's out of BC.
So his part of this episode is that like he's in jail having these conversations with this like sleazy fucking cellmate, and he's like racist, and you know he's in there for domestic battery.
He's a domestic abuser and an alcoholic.
And he's like, you know, he's like, you look down on me as a journalist. Well, you beat women, so I don't think very highly of you, sir. And then I forget why, but like then finally he's like let out of prison. They're like, he's not going to talk. Better let him out.
The government's trying to persuade him to give up the source. And he's talking with the lawyer and he goes, we asked him if he wanted a conjugal visit and he asked for a copy of the New York Times.
Yeah. So he was
just started jerking off into the Peggy Noonan's editorial for some reason.
They didn't crack him. They let him out. And like as he's leaving, he's like taking the photographs like that he like, you know, put up on the wall, you know, like the hot pot where he makes his fucking, you know, like ramen casseroles that he gets from commissary.
He drags a guy out to make him Maggie and all the other news wenches. They're like, hey, this is weird. I've been pragged out in feds before, but he just yelled at me. He didn't fuck me.
And like he's taking the photos off his cell wall. And then you realize that, like, one of the photos is, like, of him and his dad in childhood. And, like, his cellmate was his father. Yeah. And Jeff Newsroom was debating the ghost of his own shitty parents.
Although he did not at any point acknowledge. It was a surprise. Yeah. So it's like.
It makes no sense.
So he's projecting this fantasy. Who is his father? Because he looks like the picture. So that means he knows what his dad looks like. But he didn't either didn't recognize him or he was pretending it wasn't his father. And then the father didn't recognize him as his son.
Because he's interviewing his own son.
How does it make sense?
It's Oedipal. I mean, everyone has that. Like, I want to own my dead dad in a debate with logic.
Own your dead dad. You wouldn't own a dead guy who the audience later finds out is your dad.
I'm not, dude. It's like fantasy. It's like, you know, when you're with a woman for a long time and you pretend to be Emmanuel Macron and he pretends to be drama teacher.
Is it possible that the explanation is that Aaron Sorkin is a bad writer and that he just thought that would be a great twist and then just kind of had to reverse engineer it without actually making it work?
If you thought that that was the most ludicrous part of this episode, you'd be wrong. This episode also, the other subplot in this episode contains, I think, maybe the most problematic Aaron Sorkin moment ever, which is the campus rape episode.
Oh, boy. Yes, you're right.
Yes. Campus rape. This is the campus rape where the Cuomo looking producer has to go interview a college girl who's been raped on campus and like she's trying to get her rapist expelled or prosecuted from the school. And what she's done is set up sort of like an open source website where, you know, women who have been assaulted or raped can name their rapist like on campus and like, you know, be like, don't date this guy, kick him out of school, et cetera, et cetera. So he goes to interview her and like get the story. And he's like, I don't want to do this. Like, you know, I feel bad about this. And like he interviews this this college student in her dorm room alone, which is already weird, and then like goes into intimate details about like her ordeal of being raped on campus, only to sort of like use logic to tell her basically what happened to you is terrible and I believe you. I affirm you. But if your website causes even one innocent man to be accused by a lying, scheming bitch, then nothing that'll happen to you will have ever mattered.
And she agrees with him.
And she's like, I think you're right.
And
I'm taking the website down.
And then Sam Waterston dies.
Yeah, they're having an argument in Sam Waterston. Like, they play like, they used Coldplay before in the show, but what song did they use?
Oh, Shenandoah.
Yeah, Oh, Shenandoah. When he's like, collapses and makes like a look on his face like he's Toucan Sam.
Like Toucan Sam.
And he hits his head on the fucking desk, and it's one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen.
We also tweeted us laughing at that hysterically.
It's like a Monty Python sketch. He just pitches forward. He just prangs his head on the side of the desk.
I'm following the Kaiser to hell!
All right.
That Sam Waterston, what happened to Sam Waterston is seriously going to happen to me right now. I'm seriously going to.
3 hours of podcast today, boys.
Fucking A. We're
almost there. Last episode.
Let's do it. I'll stand up for this.
Do we have to do more?
No, the last one. We just wrap it up.
There's a funeral for Sam Watson's character. Jeff Newsom literally takes out a guitar, and everyone joins him with guitars around him.
Sam Watson's grandkids.
And then the other non-lizard bland white guy shows up, and he also plays on rhythm guitar.
Yeah,
and then
the black guy plays rhythm.
Yeah. And then my element of that scene that is most important is that it shows everybody like watching in like ecstasy. And like that's the real thing. It's Jeff Newsom standing in a room and people adulating him. That is a recurring motif over and over again. And that is Sorkin cosplaying as himself in a fantasy world where everybody gets how awesome he is.
But yeah. Amber, as you pointed out, he hijacks a man's wake so that he can do some impromptu rhythm and blues performance and everyone can have a big hoedown. And you were just like imagining the guy's wife coming out and be like, "My husband is dead. What are you doing, Jeff?"
And then he tells his grandson, he's like. He goes up to him and he goes, "Look, your grandfather's dead. Your parents are getting divorced. If you ever need someone to talk to just jam with, I'm here." And it's like, we're supposed to be setting up a fatherhood arc because Jeff impregnated Mackenzie with his news air. That's just, the kid, by the way, I reserve the right to fire you if it's a daughter. It's trying to set up a fatherhood arc, but he's actually grooming Sam Waterston's grandkid.
To be a newsman.
Sure.
No, that's how you become a newsman. A newsman. You're groomed
among
by
other
newsman.
Like, every newsman went through it, you're going to go through it, too.
And it's really a nerd episode because the rest of it is flashbacks to before they got them together for their first episode. And it shows Jeff Newsom being a bad newsman. He doesn't care about the news. It shows that... It was at first you're just thinking, oh, he's recommitted to the news. But you see, no, this is a genuine Saul on the road to Damascus conversion. This is born again newsman. This news is God. That's what the last episode posits.
Yeah, like in the prequel scenes, he's doing the news and he's like, "I don't care. We'll talk to the celebs. Let's do a report about Facebook." It's like the scene from The Simpsons where Flanders is recalling his period as an alcoholic. Yeah. And Landers is a boring old biddy.
I was more animal than man.
Yeah. So, folks, that's the newsroom. We've done the West Wing.
Hell yeah.
Now we've done the newsroom.
Hell yeah.
We did it, everyone.
We did it, everybody. We did it, guys.
God damn, I love podcasts.
If they could see us right now in the room.
I'm sweating.
Will is Will McAvoy. I'm the guy who fucks Olivia Munn.
I think I am going to have a heart attack, so I'm Sam Waters.
Guys. I hope it was as fun for you as it was torturous for us. I'm going to have a heart attack. My head's going to hit Ember's coffee table like a fucking cue ball break on it.
I was the Lindbergh baby. Newsman.
Cheers, everybody.
Bye.
News.
Bye.
Oh, my God.
We did it.
I know a song you like. If you love somebody enough, you follow wherever they go. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. If you love somebody enough, you'll go where your heart wants to go. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. Can you play that thing?
Yeah.
Go to the five. I know if you'd seen her, you'd tell me, 'cause you are my friend. I've got to find her, find out the trouble she's in. Jim Harper's here. If you tell me she's not here, I'll follow the trail of her. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. She would get mad and she used to say,
go back to Memphis someday. It's how I got to Memphis. It's how I got to Memphis. I haven't eaten a bite. I haven't slept 3 days or nights. It's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis.
Here comes a fancy solo.
Gotta find her and tell her that I love her so. I'll never rest till I find out why she had to go. Thank you for your precious time. Please forgive me if I start to cry. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis.
Will, Mackenzie says it's time to head back to the studio.
Thank you. I know your parents' divorce has been tough.